This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In the evening, and first things first, we have big news because Perkasa said something that kind of made sense. Its president, Dato' Ibrahim Ali, recently pointed out a flaw in the tuition fees of our public universities, namely the capped rate, which is covered by subsidies, and which means that the system could be seen to be unfairly benefiting students from richer households because they're paying the same amount as students from poorer households, but that would be a much smaller percentage of that household's income. So his suggestion to solve this is that Putrajaya make the T20 children pay higher fees in order to aid those from the B40.
So Dato' Ibrahim's kind of got the right spirit, and there are some merits to his idea. But economists think that this method, a tiered fee system, would be too complicated. Lee Hokan, a senior fellow at the Institute of Southeast Asian Studies in Singapore, said that university management will also need to start from scratch.
Honestly, reading this, I mean, on the one hand, like you said, the spirit of it, the notion that there is an unfairness when it comes to the way it is that we pay for education, the way it is that we provide education. There's something to that. However, the idea that you're going to start a tiered fee system just makes my head ache, because how is it going to work? I mean, do you have to submit your family's earnings and wealth and all those numbers? How many weeks before semester starts do you have to submit it in order to be billed appropriately for the coming semester? Because obviously you can't do it on a yearly basis. Things change very quickly.
Yeah, and you might have to do it on a semester by semester basis, where that's how usually fees are charged also.
Exactly. And more importantly, why do I need to give this to you? I mean, if it's not the law, and if you have no real legal way of verifying that this is, in fact, what I say is in my bank account is accurate,
yeah,
are we really putting it on the university? Are we putting what is essentially the job of LHDN onto public universities to actually verify that, oh, you have this many dividends, you have this much in your bank account, you have two houses? You know, it's an awful lot to continuously verify.
And it's like, you know, IRB has problems chasing tens of thousands of people to pay their taxes and expecting universities to do so. It just sounds a bit ludicrous. Though, principle-wise, it's there. He just doesn't want the system to be so unfair.
So a better suggestion, according to Lee Hock An, is to impose a wealth tax. However, Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng said in November last year that tax on wealth, inheritance or capital is out of the question, because Putrajaya has always argued that this is what makes Malaysia competitive.
Critics have argued that the ultra-rich pay a comparatively low top income tax rate at 28% and are allowed to park most of their wealth in tax-free assets.
So this made me think of the fact that the last time that we spoke about, actually about how well a country, I think up in, whether it was Finland or Sweden or some such, how well they were doing, Denmark, I believe, someone asked, well, okay, are you ready to pay then 60 to 70% when it comes to income taxes? And that is something that we absolutely don't have. I mean, when you think about 28%, if you compare it to other countries, it is low. It is definitely low. I mean, for people who aren't earning in that top bracket, obviously it sounds like an awful lot. But I think when you have a lot of money, that changes. But conversely, if you're paying a lot of taxes, your expectations go up as well. So if I'm paying a lot,
the services better match up to it.
Yeah. So, you know, is public education going to suddenly be, are we going to finally get to that standard that we're always talking about? Are we finally going to go back to being competitive with other countries and, for that matter, with private universities? There are a lot of questions here. I think on the whole, it is a much neater system, a much fairer system than tiered university fees. But in terms of implementing it, I would be curious also to see whether it is viable and politically popular.
Yeah, I also wonder that, because if, let's say, I mean, the most common notion is that, well, that just means that the rich will just take their money out of the country, and if more taxes are induced, they'll just, and they are able to do this, they'll just find another way to move their assets, their wealth offshore, which does make sense and which could have negative implications for the economy. But, you know, I'm no expert.
So bringing it back to this idea of improving funding when it comes to our public universities, our public education. We will be weighing this out after this with somebody who is in fact an expert, Professor Dr. Raja Rasia, who is a distinguished professor of international development at the Asia-Europe Institute from the University of Malaya. We'll be back to have that conversation after this. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:13 in the evening, and today we're talking about ways and means to improve funding for our public institutes of education. And there was a suggestion that came through from Perkasa's Dato Ibrahim Ali, who said maybe we could look at a tiered fee system. And then on the flip side of that, you have Lee Ho-an, who's a senior fellow at the Institute of Southeast Asian Studies, saying that no, a wealth tax is the way forward. So in trying to understand this, we have on the line now Professor Dr. Raja Rasia, Distinguished Professor of International Development at the Asia-Europe Institute from the University of Malaya. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
You're welcome. Yeah, please.
So let's start with this question. I mean, what kinds of supports are available at the moment to students in public universities who struggle to pay their fees?
Apart from the PTBN loans that we had one chap who was speaking earlier, there are some public universities that have put up some funds to assist those students seem to be starving. UM has that from time to time, and little assist of that sort, not so much beyond that.
The idea of having targeted fee increments for students depending on their family's wealth seems first like an attractive idea, but then it sounds like a nightmare to implement. What do you make of the idea, and is it, you know, can we practice it in any way?
It makes no sense to me. I think what they need to do is they will have to review the fees currently students pay. I'm talking about Malaysian students to public universities. In some of these faculties, the fees are still relatively low. They haven't really reviewed and increased it to take account of inflation for so many years. My feeling is what they should do is to review that, raise it to a certain point that makes sense, taking account of the notion that education is a public good, that it should reach as many people as possible, and the society would benefit from there. Then after that, they should have some loans going beyond the PTPN loans. And we used to have this practice for students who end up at least achieving a second upper, then you actually do away with it, the repayment of it. I think that that's the way to go, rather than having something like a progressive tax where the higher you earn, the higher you pay. It makes no sense, both in terms of how you identify those who you assume as the people who qualify and those who don't qualify. There are many ways of cheating the system.
And when it comes to, I mean, the idea of having an overall wealth tax then that is imposed on, not just on a student level, but just in general, is that also something that you, how do you view that going? I mean, can you take us through the pros and cons of it?
Conceptually, it makes sense, but you can't simply use the term wealth tax. In countries, the example of the Nordic countries you had just now, you have relatively high income tax, but families can actually put against a lot of expenses against that tax. Families in Sweden can have two homes, and they can actually write off income against homes that they mortgage. That's one. Second, you can actually reclaim the entire fees of your children, simply because these are economies undergoing a demographic transition to a point of actually having a very few birth rates. In other words, the net birth rate you're talking about is really negative in that sense. Fearing the possible further contraction of population, governments have actually encouraged them to have more children. Now, with that sort of mind, we too, Malaysia, about to face that situation. I think it's not the right thing to simply use an example like that, because when you study them profoundly, you'll find that in reality, not many people are paying that much taxes, even though you may have 60% of the overall tax there. Now, coming back to the point of a wealth tax, I think most of the time, wealth tax only functions properly when you're looking at the point of acquisition, like, say, having a capital gains tax for homes, rather than, say, a family that would have paid taxes on incomes and then subsequently using the balance to buy other properties. It doesn't make any sense to go after them simply because they have lots of houses. It's good to have a capital gains tax that actually regulates at the point of acquisition. In the UK, for example, you have one house that you can use, choose as the one that you put against the exemptions after you hold the house for 7 years. It's not like that in Malaysia. I think that that will be very useful because then you ensure that in an item which is an essential basic need, a home, you would not have speculation. You would not have people looking to invest to make money from a basic item like that. Malaysia lacks that. That's an example of where you actually address the point of wealth rather than going after people with higher wealth. Then you might end up becoming a communist society, the communism of the past.
So there is also this worry, and this is partially the government's line as well, that implementing a wealth tax might actually destabilize the local economy. What is the context behind this concern?
Yes, it immediately sends you this message that accumulation is discouraged when growth very often relates to accumulation. Why would an entrepreneur want to invest if he's not going to be able to apart from self-esteem, the wealth one accumulates beyond simply physiological needs and self-actualization. That motivator would be lost in many different ways. And second, you would, in that sense, drive away capital. You might actually see capital flight simply because you are actually discouraging the pursuit of accumulation.
And Prof, I mean, you've given some very interesting numbers, really, about why it is that taxes can work the way they do in richer countries that have different concerns to us. I'm curious also whether or not this idea of paying higher taxes and of that potentially being kicked into gear in our country, is it also a question of a shift in mindset, or does it always come down to really bread and butter issues of, you know, wanting to be able to, for example, start a business and be successful and not have to pay that much? You know, do we just need to adjust the way we think about taxes and what they're used for?
Sometimes we'll have to also look at our neighboring countries. Economies in Southeast Asia, for example, under the ASEAN framework, they've really liberalized, deregulated in many different ways. Under such circumstances, it's very likely that if, for example, Malaysia chooses to raise the incidental income tax in the way it's done there, the highest bracket, I think it's about 28%. Now, if you raise that, which is significantly higher than what Singapore has, of course, we will not need to worry so much about Singapore because it's a small country. Not that many entrepreneurs can actually flock there. But what happens if you have the current tax rates that are maintained in Philippines, in Thailand, Indonesia, and then you see Malaysia raising it? You may actually see capital flight. And it's not a problem for any ASEAN member to relocate in another ASEAN member country to function, because the idea of enjoying the same rights will apply to anyone that can declare, that can show a rule of origin of 40% or more, which means to say that so long as they have 40% value added, they can export. So it's okay for me when I'm an exporter, I function from any part of ASEAN. So in many different sense, one has to take into account all those things. I like an egalitarian society if you can achieve that. But that actually discourages innovation. That actually discourages entrepreneurial spirit. How do you balance that between having an egalitarian society and at the same time, in the Schumpeterian sense, promoting entrepreneurship? I think that actually calls for a selection of taxes that are simple to administer, that doesn't confuse the businessman, and at the same time provide some sort of a critical mass of wealth for some sort of distribution, and at the same time maintaining expenditure in the country. That's how I look at it, not by introducing a range of too many taxes.
So there's the argument that students from richer households benefit unfairly from public universities, which have capped tuition fees, and the same goes for the public healthcare system. What are your thoughts on that?
I mentioned just now earlier, I think what we require is a review of the fee system used by public universities. I think a lot of these universities are actually enjoying very... Not that the students are enjoying low fees, simply because the education ministry has capped fee payments. It's like, I can't remember now, but a few years ago, it was 13,000 ringgit to do an entire medical degree at the University of Malaya, when it was about 500,000 at IMU. Look at the difference. Now, that's because the 13,000 hasn't changed for decades. Now, I think they will have to review that and bring it up to a point, not looking at the fees as a number that reflects what the market says. Because I did mention to you, if one takes the lenses of education as a public good, then you will have to see that you expose education to as many people as possible. The society should benefit from it because it's a non-excludable and non-rivalrous good. As such, it should be higher than what it is now, but it should be lower than what relative prices say. By markets, I mean relative prices. Now, once you've done that, then you can see that with that sort of collection, you will have enough to actually give scholarships to other students. Now, you will have the version that we will refer to as the PTPN type of people who really cannot afford. Now, that's a sort of a fee payment that you subsidize in ways to address people who are classified as poor, really poor. Now, the second one is you also have those people who perform. Now, so long as they perform, they get a second upper degree and above, which is a standard practice in many public universities here. You write away that fee subsequently, the loans that you have taken. And I think I'm not sure if all the public universities practice that, but that's what I saw happening in public universities then. So in that sort of way, I do not actually see that the rich students are actually benefiting from a fee that is subsidized, because we have already reviewed it and taken account of all the different arguments that go with a public good. And at the same time, the fees will have to be higher than what it is now.
Prof, in closing, I just wanted to ask one last question, which was, if we're trying to come up with ways in which to create a more egalitarian society, and at the same time, as you rightly say, also encouraging business interests, also encouraging entrepreneurship, you've already laid out a few ways that we could go about this, namely, by creating simple taxes that are easy to implement. What is the next step towards trying to make this happen? How would this kind of set us off on the path towards effecting actual change?
I can give... First, let me make two conceptual points. When it comes to wealth distribution, there are two extreme points that one needs to take into account. If you have too much of wealth in the hands of a few, they will distort the allocation of resources because they are in control of that allocation. Demand simply picks up the needs of people who have the capacity to pay. Those who can't pay, they are not in the demand curve. Now, that's one. It distorts and then makes the diversion of resources to actually reflect their interest much more than the interest of the majority who may be poor. Now, the second point is, this is not a major case, but in when it comes to the number of people involved, it's large. When you're dealing with wealth, you may have people who may have land tenure. They may be owning land or they may be living by agricultural land. They have access to food. Now, you may have workers who are living in cities, but they may also be in rural locations, but they may not have access to land, completely relying on wages. Now, if they don't earn that wage, they're going to starve, as opposed to those people who have those pieces of land, but they're not earning wages, but they're not going to starve. So one has to address these two extremes. Now, coming back to the point, I can demonstrate the point that you made, you raised in relation to an example. If you look at how a capital gains tax is imposed here, now it has a strong bearing, even for the poor, because when you look at the Klang Valley, you'll find house prices spiraling. You'll find house prices expensive for most of the poor. Most of them are not going to be able to buy houses. Now, there are a number of reasons why those prices go up, apart from the fact that developers are likely to build condominiums and so on simply because they opened up sales to foreigners, which is not the same, say, in the UK. You cannot simply own, and at the same time, you have a high capital gains tax. You can use only one house in your entire lifetime. Here, you can keep changing the houses that you have, and you have much lower capital gains tax. Now, those things need to be applied. Once you apply a high capital gains tax, you would not have a situation where a lot of people here who are not, in my mind, they are not real entrepreneurs. they are rentiers in many ways, although they are not seeking rents in a corrupt way. No. But rents, actually, in the Marshallian definition, includes them. They just buy houses. They book a fee when a house is being built. Then once they get the key, they start selling it immediately, simply because we don't have a stiff capital gains tax to prevent that. Now, what that does is to prevent the poor from being able to access houses at reasonable prices. Now, of course, developers are happy because the houses are all sold before they even start building. Now, this is just an example I'm demonstrating. So what I'm saying here is redistributing wealth should come from the angle of acquisition rather than going after people who already have the wealth, because they would have had paid their taxes before, except that we all know not many people pay income taxes. But in reality, that's how the system works.
Prof, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you.
That was Professor Dr. Rajarasia, Distinguished Professor of International Development at the Asia-Europe Institute from University of Malaya, weighing in on, I guess we can't use the term wealth tax anymore.
Nope.
We need to reconsider that. But weighing in on whether or not raising taxes is the way to go forward when it comes to raising funds for public education, or a tiered fee system, which I think we have now debunked. Now, you can let us know what you think as well. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to the Evening Edition today with Lynn and Kelvin. It's 6:36, and earlier we were talking about ideas that have been put out in order to raise funds for public universities, because that is a perennial issue. So Dato' Ibrahim Ali of Perkasa has said, what about a tiered student fees,
you know? Yeah.
So basically people who belong to richer families would then have to pay more. Of course, how is that going to work?
Economists would say the one we spoke to earlier would also argue that it's absolute nonsense, because it's just too complex and too costly a system for universities to do.
Yeah, I'm not an economist, just someone who likes organization, and I just thought no. On the other hand, we've also heard suggestions coming through for renewed suggestions for the wealth tax to be put in place. The guest that we spoke to earlier, Professor Dr. Rajarasia, basically said that we might need to rethink wealth distribution as a whole, you know, that neither of those systems is really going to account for it. So we've been asking you for your thoughts as well. Is a wealth tax or something approaching it, you know, where we pay a higher, our taxes are capped at a higher point, especially for the very wealthy, and that goes through to public services. Is that something that you would like to see? Any other suggestions for wealth distribution in the country? Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a message here that came through from MD.
Government should consider tax refunds for angel sponsors to relatives' child, or at a more open system to sponsor someone else's child. This is like contributing to charity that entitles a tax refund. This encourages motivated people to sponsor studies and rely less on education loans like PTPTN, like peer-to-peer lending. I personally sponsor my niece to study, and I'm not eligible for tax returns. I work double jobs to make me seem to have higher income. That makes me seem like I have a higher income and pay more tax. But big part of the money goes to her private college education. I discourage her to take PTPTN because I don't want her to be in debt and having less financial choices after graduating. I have a day job and an SSM registered online business. I need to pay taxes for my income. Always at the losing end.
That's rough, MD, especially considering that a significant chunk of your income is actually going towards helping your niece.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is an interesting point, because it is true that there are people who want to be able to pay for the education of other people's children, right?
Yeah.
Children that you care about, children whose lives you are a part of. And right now, that is just... nothing will change the fact that it is just money exiting your account. But it makes a difference if you are able to have that tax refund, if you're able to offset it in some way. That would go, I think, quite a way towards also making it an interesting option for people in general to consider.
I just wonder then if there's a broader conversation there about who actually should provide in these instances. In this case, it is an individual that's providing to someone who needs it. But if, let's say, the government had enough money to do so, this individual wouldn't have to fork out the money in the first place.
Matthew, meanwhile, says wealth distribution by itself is a flawed concept. Why do we punish people for being successful? Rich people spend more as well, so it's good for the economy.
I feel like I don't have enough economic backing to back the fact that rich people do spend more. I'm not sure.
Well, I think, to be fair, while we have been using the words, the phrase wealth distribution, we should point out that this is actually more about being able to provide for people within a social safety net, more so than it being about redistributing wealth. It is, I think, more to do with the fact that if you look at people who are, to go back to the very start of this concept, if you look at people who are paying capped tuition fees, is that unfair at the moment when less of a percentage of one's family income goes to paying the same fee as someone else who comes from a much poorer background? Does that need to change and adapt? Mm. So that's the original point. So to go back to, you know, penalizing people for being successful, I don't think anybody wants to do that. And if you heard our interview earlier with Professor Dr. Rajarasia, he made that point also that you don't want to discourage people from accumulating wealth. You don't want to discourage people from starting businesses and the like. The question then is, how can we provide for other people within society as well?
And I guess he had that argument where we are further punishing them by charging them when the moment they get rich, because before that, all those years, they had been paying a tax rate that has been adjusting based on their income.
Yes, that's right. I think Matthew was still typing. Keep those thoughts coming. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can also call 7733-2900.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.